Yep.
Uh-oh.
What?
Well, why aren't we doing an opening?
It's 7... Hello?
Hello?
Did I not put that on automatic?
I thought you did. We've always had it.
Are you hearing it on your side?
No.
It's 7 p.m., blah, 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 blah. Welcome to All About... Well, there we go. See, we just got 500 listeners. Hold on a second.
That's right, because the opening didn't happen like it's supposed to.
Where's
the
intro? There it is.
It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com. In Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93. That's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebach Winery. We are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushion Park in Montana.
Mammoth Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org. All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
Yeah, all right. You need to reconfigure the.
I might not have put it on automatic.
Oh, okay.
And I need to redo the intro too, because that's on my to-do list somewhere. All kinds of stuff. But anyway,
in the near future, do the
Because those were all guests that we had during the past year, maybe year and a half, maybe year. I don't know, but. Fantastic, wonderful guest, and we're looking forward to a great and even increasingly better new year. So this is our first show of the new year. This is great. So we say goodbye to 2012 or 2012, however you want to say it, and we start a new year. We had a bunch of listeners. We were just looking at the reports before the show started. Fantastic response, and it's great to have everybody with us listening as we start the new year off. And it's just great to look at the stats and think, you know, how this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to, you know, over 40,000 people. And that's fantastic. That was a shock.
It is a shock. And we thank everyone out there for listening, too. I mean, it's been, we are shocked.
I think originally 3 years ago when we started this, it was kind of like just Ron and I talking, you know, and it was the informative and all that kind of, you know, entertaining thing. Now we're looking at the stat. It's not just us anymore. It's like,
no, we're not there's actually people out there.
Yes. So that's fantastic. I just saw that and I go, oh, okay, now get a little, you know, mics right now. There's a reason. Anyway, it's great to have you all with us on the new year, and hope you'll enjoy the rest of the shows and hope you become a part of it. Anytime you want to call in during the show, please feel free, whether he's talking or whatever. I can signal him, you know, and tell him that we have a sound for that. And I can.
that's the new sound. That's not it.
That's not it. Where's the. There we go.
That'll
tell him. Yeah, I knew it was one of those. But there's ways that we can tell him, multiple ways to tell that there's somebody on the line. Get in touch with us right now. You can get on the phone and call. Right now, during the program, anytime, 646-727-3235. Call that number and get on the horn and we'll talk about wine with you. You can ask a question, you can make a comment, just make it about wine and, you know, that kind of thing. So don't get off topic and, you know, that kind of thing. But it's good to have you with us. And
yeah, marital problems, we're not going to discuss that. It's
right.
Just wine. It's all about wine.
That's another that's another show, and we don't cover that here.
Yeah.
So if you start going off the topic quite a bit, we may have to put a cork in it.
Very good.
Okay. Anyway, something like that. We are here. This is a new show, and we're almost halfway done already. There we go.
That's right.
So on with the topic.
On with the topic. Well, actually, there's no topic today. We're just going to talk about stuff. There's a whole bunch of different things I'm going to throw out. Because the new year, and this is the first show of the new year, again, I reiterate, welcome to 2013 and All About Wine. And glad everyone can tune in and listen to us. Hope you enjoyed the last year. And we've said this over and over again. We will continue to say it. If you have any subjects you want to discuss, let us know. We will be more than happy to do it. Our email us, our call us or something. We had an individual ask about planting grapes and all that, and we gave out some information on that. I hope he got the information he needed or wanted. I haven't heard from him since then, so either he thought it was horrible and he didn't respond, or he thought it was great and didn't respond. Either way, if you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine, and sometimes it's very difficult to try to sort everything out and find it where you want to find it. So,
you can email us. Sorry about that. You can email us. You can contact us on Facebook, on the Facebook page. Ron monitors that. I get in there every once in a while, like every other day, every day. But Ron's your main source there, because if you throw something out, I'm just going to go, hey, Ron, there's a question on there that don't expect me to respond unless it's, you know, related to the show. When's the show going to be on Thursday? If you ask anything other than that, I'm going to have to refer back to hundreds of pages of show notes or something, but we're constantly looking at the page and getting back to you. That's how that other question was originated, right? Was on the Facebook page? Was that from?
It was. You're right.
I was thinking of. So yeah, contact us on the Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And you can, you know, relate to us that way. So that's another one. And or the email address is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. Ask your wine-related, show-related questions through either one of those mediums, and we'll be happy to hear from you and, who knows, answer your question on the air or do some research, and love doing that. So do it.
Yeah, and talk about it and let you know what's going on. But, anything. I mean, again, related about wine, but we're more than happy to let you know what's going on. Or if you have any questions about past programs, you can always get in touch with us about that, too. We really don't mind letting you know or checking archives. Mike's very good at that. That's his forte there. He can check the archives and find out stuff and do it very quickly and let you know what's going on and all. So again, it's because we have so many listeners out there, we have to talk about that.
Yes. Yeah. Good.
So tonight, we're just going to cover a few topics here and there, a few different things that I have pulled up over the holidays and stuff. And speaking of which everyone had a great holiday season, and it's all over. It's back to the grind now, although the Orthodox Christmas is coming up, I think, a week from Monday, or this coming Monday, and then the Orthodox New Year is a week from Monday. So for those of you who fall into that category, then you still got your Christmas and your New Year coming up. But for most of you out there, I hope you had a good holiday season, and we're back in the grind of work and everything now. So be safe out there as you're doing stuff, and stay tuned to us for this year. Again, we're just going to cover a few on-end subjects and a few things that I want to tell you about and talk about a little bit here. First thing, since we did just pass New Year, champagne. Hope all of you enjoyed yourself a glass or two of the bubbly. Sparkling wine, champagne, or any number of names that goes by out there, wherever you bought it, different countries have different names that we've already discussed and all that. But hope you enjoyed some champagne over the holidays. But a little bit of information about the origin of champagne and the different different areas of champagne. I am going to also refer back to the Joy's Joy of Wine, her blog here. Joy, if you're listening to me, I guess I should get a hold of you and tell you I'm quoting you a lot on this too, because she really does. I give her a lot of credit because she does the research and then I talk about it, which is fantastic for me because I don't have to worry about it. I trust that her research is solid. But Joy's Joy of Wine blog, she has some information on here about champagne and the origin of champagne and how it, what the beginning of it is and all that. So let me tell you a little bit from her blog here, different things from her blog. Drinking champagne for celebrations began actually in the royal courts of Europe back in the late 18th century. Champagne had always been viewed as a drink of the rich, a luxury, a sort of status symbol for the rich. But in 987, when Hugh Capet, I believe was how it's pronounced, C-A-P-E-T, Hugh Capet, was crowned the King of France, he had the local wine served at his coronation banquets. This wine, made from a Pinot Noir, was a pale pink wine, sort of like a blush, if you will, without bubbles. So those of you out there who stick your nose up at blush, it's been around for a long, long time. It began as a local tradition of serving the Champagne region's wines for celebrations. Now, this came from the Champagne regions of France, actually what we know as Champagne regions. During the mid-17th century, Charles de Saint-Evremond decreed to serve only the wines of the Champagne region at his London parties and banquets. His taste influenced some of the most fashionable men of London. So as champagne was soon being offered and ordered from France and shipped throughout England. Again, this was in the 17th century. It was during the shipping that the wine could restart the fermentation process. And as we've talked about the champagne, a classic champagne, it's got a second fermentation that takes place in the bottle, which causes the bubblies. When it did start this, when the wine was open, it was bubbly. And so the English loved this and began seeking out those sparkling champagnes. But the French winemakers were at a loss for how to control the process at the time to make the sparkly bubbly. In 1715, during the 18th century, again, the centuries are 18th century, 1700s. In 1715, Philippe II, Duke of Orleans, enjoyed a sparkling version of champagne nightly. Paris's fashionable society followed the Duke's example and sought out the bubbly version of the wine, making it one of the favorite wine and favorite drinks of the French nobility. But it was during the 18th century that champagne houses began to dominate over the vineyard owners. The houses of Louis Redour, Piper Hedseck, Tattinger, and Moët Chandon were founded during this time. And this is, again, in the 18th century, late 1700s. But by the end of the 18th century, over 90% of the Champagne's region's wine production was still non-sparkling wine. Dom Perignon is usually credited with the invention of sparkling wine. We've all, you know, heard about, you know, Dom Perignon and how he was the creator. And if you haven't, I guess I'll dedicate a little bit to that in another episode. But it wasn't until the 19th century that the classic method Champenois, the traditional method of making champagne involving riddling, was used reliably. Riddling, I may have talked about this before, but it always is good to address this quickly again. Champagne bottles are put on a rack. It's just a big, big board, stands about 6 foot tall. It's got holes in it, and these hoses are slanted a little bit. So when you put a champagne bottle into it, head first, it tilts it at an angle, at a slight angle, about a 30-degree angle. These set in the rack, and a riddler, a person who goes through, turns these bottles a quarter of a turn periodically at a given time. If he doesn't, then a lot of sediment settles on the bottom of it, and it will stay there on the glass. And so to keep it from becoming stained on any one side or any one area on the bottle, you have a riddler that comes through and turns these bottles just a little turn on each one. They're called riddlers because of the sound as they're going through it, just a drrrr, and because they're so fast and they know exactly what they're doing. They turn these things very quickly. And the little punk, the little hole in the bottom of champagne, not only gives strength to the bottle, but it also helps them turn it at times, too. They can grab a hold of the punk or the hole and turn the champagne bottle. So it's just that is what riddling involves, is turning the bottle so it doesn't form a sediment line on the bottom of the bottle or on the line on the bottle. It was during the time that the riddlers and making the classic method of making champagne, it was during this time that the sweetness levels of the wine could be selected. Okay, champagne went from dull or sweet to demi-sec or half dry to sec or dry, sec, extra sec or extra dry described a wine with even less sugar, and brut or extra brut was made without sugar. Extra dry is now the style that the majority of champagne is made in. Now, very confusing. People don't understand. The sugar content of wines. Let me see if I can't explain this a little bit more. Sugar content, these are grams per liter. I'm trying to think of a way to explain this. So since we're not on the metric system, a lot of people don't understand the grams. But this is grams per liter. And a liter is, there's 3,785 milliliters in a gallon. So there's not quite 4 liters in a gallon. So a liter is less than a fourth of a gallon, to give you an idea. But brut nature, the rating brut nature on a champagne means that no sugar is added. It can contain between 0 and 3 grams per liter sugar. Just because there's none added doesn't mean it doesn't have any. Extra brut, between 0 and 6 grams per liter. Brut, 0 to 12 grams per liter. That just gives you an idea there. Extra dry, extra sec, or extra secco, S-E-C-O, this is 12 to 17 grams per liter. So it's a little bit sweeter than the top three, the brut, extra brut, or brut. Brut nature, extra brut, or brut. Brut is being the driest. Dry, or sec, or secco, is 17 to 32. So extra dry, extra sec, means that it's, you know, it's a little less sugar. Dry, secco, or sec, is 17 to 32 grams. Demi-sec, or semi-secco, sickle is 32 to 50 grams per liter. So you're getting quite sweet when you start getting up into this level of the champagne. And dull, D-O-U-X, sweet or dulce, is 50 plus grams per liter. And so that's really pretty sweet. So when you start getting wines that say a sweet champagne or stuff like that, then it is pretty sweet champagne there. So those are the different levels that are marked are the levels of sugar on champagne. During the 1860s, during the great phylloxera epidemic in France, over 40% of the grapevines were destroyed in a 15-year period. We've talked about phylloxera before. We can again at a later date. If you want to know more about it, let me know. I'll talk about phylloxera, the great phylloxera epidemic of France. But from the late 1850s to the mid-1870s, over 40% of the grapes in France were destroyed. Only after grafting onto aphid-resistant American grapevines was the devastation stopped. We went in there and said, you can do this, you can put this on these grapevines, on these rootstock, and it will be okay. Actually, everywhere in the world, except for a couple of countries, is on American rootstock now because of phylloxera. So it's a pretty devastating bug, and it still is floating around out there too, by the way. 20th century came, and again, the Champagne regions of France took a major hit. This time, it wasn't because of any bug or anything in the grapevines. It was because of two world wars. It almost destroyed the Champagne production areas. The vineyards were flattened, were ran over. They weren't being kept. Obviously, they couldn't be kept. Fighting going all around and everything else, and it just wasn't practical to go out there and try to continue to save a vineyard. So it pretty much stopped the production, devastated it by the war. The Russian Revolution also created problems. Prohibition and the Great Depression all closed a lot of the markets for the lucrative champagne barrel. You got to realize that wine is a worldwide sales of stuff, and champagne was spread throughout the world. The champagne regions were being sold everywhere. So when the Russian Revolution came in, that pretty much stopped champagne from being shipped to there, which was a big market. Prohibition in the United States was another big market that was not open because they obviously weren't shipping champagne to us during our stopping of alcohol. And then the Great Depression not only affected the United States, but also affected countries around the world, and that seriously hurt champagne sales. It slowly started to rise up. By the 1950s, the sale of champagne has been steadily rising. So it is it recovered, and it's been recovered nicely. Today, there are over 250 million bottles of champagne are produced in France each year. The British are the biggest consumers of champagne, with over 30 million bottles of champagne every year being consumed in England. That's more than anyone else in the world, like I said. Big champagne drinkers there. And champagne is really used for commemorate everything, you know, launching of a ship to marriages, life events, religious celebrations. It's always something that is used as a special occasion wine and as a celebratory type drink. So, and you know, I said this before, a couple of weeks before the New Year's for the holidays. Don't just enjoy champagnes during the holidays or during special occasions. It is great anytime. There's all sorts of different sparkling wines out there. There's all sorts of different levels of sweetness. There's all sorts of price ranges. You can pretty much find anything to fit your budget. So by all means, don't just say, oh, this is for a special occasion, I can't buy it any other time. It is good anytime. A quote, in a perfect world, everyone would have a glass of champagne every evening, which is something that we can all remember and probably, you know, strive to do, actually, if we could. But a little bit of history on champagne for you, a little bit of background on it, since we just went through the holidays there, and that was the some champagne background. Let's here's your email, Mike. I just saw it.
That was sent like a year ago.
At least last year.
he responds to the All About Wine mail a lot quicker than this. So
yeah, obviously.
Okay. Yeah. All righty.
Yeah. Well, I'm going in here finding these different things I pulled up on my email. That's where I store them. I just saw yours. Mike was asking me before the program if I got his emails. And I did.
You store mine in a crate somewhere with a lock on it, I guess.
Yeah.
couldn't find the key until now. That's good.
Okay.
Not a problem. Sooner than later. I knew you'd get around to it sometime.
Eventually.
Yeah. Almost forgot what it was about. Okay.
I'll forward it back to you and you can see.
Okay.
Okay. But yeah.
All right.
Let's see. Last bit of information. Thanks to Joy's Joy of Wine. She does a great job on that. If you haven't found that site, jump into it. joysjoyofwine.blogspot.com. And she has a lot of great information on there, and she has a lot of great, she does a nice job of researching everything she's writing about and all that. So I've got to give her a lot of credit for that. Give her credit for what I just read you about there and all that. So a nice blog spot. I enjoy reading her stuff. Joy, if you're out there listening, then thank you for listening, and thank you for the stuff that you're putting out there. It's really a lot of great information that she always puts on her blog spot. We talked about blogs before on wines. There's a lot of great, great blogs out there on wine. So check them out. We've talked a whole bunch about it in past programs about blogs and what's available and what's out there. So, all right, enough for that. I was trying to obviously kill a little bit of time there while I was talking, and it worked. I'm back to where I want to be here. Something else, a new lineup of wines. This, again, an information show here, so let me tell you, I get a bunch of little bits of information. Freschello, USA. Freschello, I think it's pronounced. F-R-E-S-C-H-E-L-L-O. Freschello has introduced this Freschello Vivo, Freschello Sweet Italy, and Freschello Frizzante wine brands to the U.S. market. The company's most popular line, Freschello Vivo, includes a Rosso, a Bianco, and a Rosé varieties. And its Freschello Sweet Italy line was created specifically for the younger American market. And so all of you 20-somethings out there and 30-somethings, this is for you, which tends to enjoy sweet and fruity wines, the company says. Well, if they say so, it must be true. The Freschello Frizzante line is made up of light, fruity, Prosecco-style sparkling wines. And here you go again, some more sparklings. I just talked about it, and this is it's a good way. It has fewer calories. And the 750-milliliter bottle is suggested retail at only $5.99. What a deal, what a deal. So if you're out there looking for a new line, these are Italian wines, look in your Italian section of your wine stores. Freschello, Freschello USA wines, and you can find it if you're looking on the internet. You can find it under FreschelloUSA.com. That's FreschelloUSA.com. Cool little thing there. Okay. I just said something. Jump up on my screen here that I don't want. I don't know why it does that stuff. Something else here. This is finding the perfect wine match. I saw this and I thought this was sort of interesting. Wine Match, a leading wine matching website with integrated social media, optimized its search tools for the use with the Apple iPad and Android tablets. It's Wheel Play feature has been enhanced with sliders and helpful tips to make it easier for consumers to find the right wine while dining out or on the go, the company says. By using the sliders, consumers can adjust wine characteristics like fruit, finish, aroma, oak, and tannins, and find the wine that matches desired taste. So, winematch.com, I'm not familiar with that, but they have a new tool in there so that you can slide the thing around and find your perfect wine for what you're looking for on any particular day or meal or whatever it is that you're searching for out there. Safeway. This is something that caught my eye here too over the holidays. I saw this. Safeway has new wrapped bottles, new wrapped wines. It's a first of a kind wrapped bottle. It's the vehicle for a new line of wines from Hillsburg, California. Winemaker there, Tret Hurst, making it for the retail grocer Safeway that revolves around occasion-based purchasing. And it's the 22 SKUs are wines in the evocative wrapped bottle line, each linked to a specific buying occasion. So these are wrapped for special occasions. And it's part. You've seen the wraps around bottles and stuff. I mean, we all have. They're out there. But this is just, it's really caught my eye. Using an inventive variety names and, as it says, quote, exquisitely designed wraps that tell a story, present a recipe, or celebrate a special occasion, says the CEO of Tret Hurst, Phil Hurst is his name. He says, I thought for a long time that there's a real opportunity to engage wine consumers on their own terms. We offer them products based on provenance and variety, yet they are buying wine for occasions. Consumers want a wine for fish, a wine for a barbecue, and a wine that makes a hit at a dinner party. Instead, they're offered 6,000 indistinguishable and unmemorable Pinot Noir brands from various parts of California. That is quoted by of Phil Hurst, the CEO of Hurst, our Tret Hurst Winery. According to Hurst, Safeway launched the brand to fortify its lead in the wine category against competitors and to make it cool to shop Safeway for wine again. You know, it's always cool to shop a grocery store for wine. sorry, all of you grocery stores out there. The evocative wrap bottle and line includes varieties such as Curious Beast, a California red blend, targeted at occasions such as Halloween and Day of the Dead. Fuchsia in California rosé and white wine blends for the Girls Gone Summer consumer. And Candel's Russian River Valley sparkling wine, Brut Rosé, for anniversaries and birthdays. Distinguishing themselves on Safeway store shelves, the nine varieties introduced so far wrapped from base to neck in a tear and moisture-resistant patent-pending material from a proprietary U.S. supplier. Constructed of a film layer between two sheets of paper, the wrap is set to perform like a fully synthetic paper but prints like a traditional pulp-based paper. The wraps are four-color printed using envelope-converting technology and manually applied to the 750 bottles. The wrap is 100% FSC certified and can be disposed of via a single stream recycling. So they are all recyclable. In September, Safeway began a national rollout of the first nine SKUs and the evocative are the first nine products in the evocative wrap bottle line. Another eight will be released in the spring of 2013 for a total production of 100,000 cases in the first year. They're priced from $11.99 to $29.99, with the champagne offering at $49.99. You know, I think it's great and it's wonderful to have pretty wrapped bottles, and it's great and it's wonderful to have all this stuff on there. But if the wine's not good, it doesn't make any difference. What you pretty up on the outside, they're not going to continue to sell. And, you know, at $49.99 for their champagne, their California champagne, if that's not good, there's a lots of other bubblies out there that people can pick up, and they don't have to have a happy birthday on a wrap bottle on the outside. But, you know, that's just my opinion of it. You got to have the product inside. It says, according to Hurst, sales on the line are already far ahead of expectations. We are actually reproducing the first round already. In the U.S., Safeway will be the only retailer to carry the line. But Hurst says his winery is pursuing opportunities in other countries to launch similar products. Safeway's not here in Florida. So, you know, I mean, if they're the only one carrying it, aren't they losing markets in other states? I don't know. I thought that was interesting. Wrapped bottles to present the wines and talk about it that way. That, you know, interesting approach, I thought. Something else I want to... Oops, that's not it. Oh, no. I've got notes all over in front of me here and all around me, and I can't find what... Oh, there's what I want. This is some new products on the shelf, a couple of new products on the shelf you might be interested in. The Clos de Beau winery has debuted a new red blend called Clos de Beau Rouge, which combines Cabernet Sauvignon, Petit Syrah, Merlot, Petit Verdot, Malbec, and Chardonnay into a tasty wine featuring rich red fruits, they say, jammy notes, and aromas of blackberry, plum, and chocolate. So look for that, the Clos de Beau Rouge. The new wine is available nationally, and it is suggested retail $11.99, which really is a reasonable price, I think. I'm going to have to look for that myself. Another one, new product that's out there, is Pernod Ricard USA has launched its first California still wine called Deadbolt, which is a blend of several red varieties, including Cabernet Sauvignon, Petit Syrah, Merlot, Zinfandel, Syrah, and other components, although it doesn't list them here. It may on the bottle, I don't know. At first available only in limited distribution, and that will be in California, Nevada, Illinois, Massachusetts, and Colorado. Suggested retail price of $15.99. So if you live in any of those states and you see that on the shelf, then send me a bottle. I'd like to try it. $15.99 for that one. So a couple of new bottles out on the shelf that was launched right before the holiday season. And it's available now, so you can go out there and pick those up. Something else I found, and I want to share with you here, is I found a real good article on cognac. I'm not going to read you the whole article. I'm not going to talk about the whole article. I'm not going to go into the whole thing. It was a great article on cognac, talking about the different cognacs and the leading brands and some of them and the taste and how they're distributing all that. Very, very interesting. Out of one of the trade journals that I get, Beverage Dynamics, which I love Beverage Dynamics, by the way. It's really got a lot of information in there. A lot of the things I pass on to you is from Beverage Dynamics. But a couple of things I do want to pass on to you here. Cognac is distilled grapes. It's still, you know, the grape, and it's along that line, only it's distilled as opposed to fermented. But the leading cognacs in sales, and this is thousands 9-liter cases. So that's how they figure 9-liter cases. The leading one, and I mean, this runs away with this, is Hennessy. Moët Hennessy out of USA. It's originally from France. And the 2011 sales of this is 2,205,000 liter, 9-liter cases. Unbelievable. They run away with it. Hennessy is just the seller of cognac. Behind that is Remy Martin, then Courvoisier, then Selignac, Martel, Jacques Cordon, Ansac, Conjure, Elise Cognac, and Landy. Those are the top sellers of cognac in the world, and in this country. Hennessy, though, I was amazed that Hennessy had such a large sales of cognac. But a little bit here is something I want to pass on to you. Rules of the region, cognac. All cognacs are brandy, but not all brandies are cognac, goes the saying. It's useful in reminding everyone that the classic French grape brandy can come only from a specific region. Cognac also has numerous rules and regulations that make it the world's most sought-after brandy. All cognacs are also blends of many different spirits from the allowed regions, aged for different lengths of time and brought together by a house's master blender, the person really responsible for the final bottled product. Start with VS, or very special, and that's what it means. You see a cognac or brandy that says VS, all it means is very special. There's no any type of, you know, coded meaning on it. sometimes called three stars. First, it can be made of up to 40 different UDVs, and that's EAUX-DE-VIEX, and I believe that's pronounced UDVs, that come from all of the six crews. Again, we're speaking France, so you got your crews, CRU crews, or vineyard regions. The crews are the vineyard regions, allowed to provide spirits for cognac. All right, so there are six crews that are allowed to provide grapes and spirits from cognac, six vineyards. For those of you who want to know, these areas are Grand Champagne, Petite Champagne, Borderies, Finbois, that's F-I-N-S-B-O-I-S, Bonbois, B-O-N-B-O-I-S, and Bois Ordinaires, that's B-O-I-S-O-R-D-I-N-A-I-R-E-S, Bois Ordinaires. VS must also contain no spirit aged less than 2 years, and probably most spirits have been aged between 3 and 5 years. So you see cognac with a VS. And a VSOP, which means very superior old pale, not very special, but very superior old pale, also called reserve, the youngest spirit is by law allowed to be 4 years old, though they usually contain spirits up to 10 or 12 years or even older. Depending on the house style, tradition, and the needs of the blender. So the cognacs on the very superior old pale will give you a minimum of 4 years, but most of them will give you more just because it's, you know, they're trying to outdo the other, basically. And an XO also, this refers to and means for extra old. It's also called hors d'âge. And here I am destroying the French words again. H-O-R-S-D apostrophe A-G-E. And there's the age with that little mark above it. So hors d'âge, I believe it's pronounced. Components must be at least 6 years old, and they're likely to include some of the oldest cognacs used. Most cognac makers will use cognacs much older than required by law, allowing, say, XOs to reach a minimum of 20 years in order to create an attractive blend. So just a little bit about cognac. If y'all want, if you want an episode on cognac, I haven't covered cognac because it's just, it's, you know, it's still grapes, but it's just not really wine, but yet maybe it's sort of like, maybe, because it's grapes. I don't know. But if you want to know more about cognac, you can look it up. Or if you want me to do an episode on it, let me know. I will be more than happy to do an episode on cognac. It's interesting subject, cognac, and it's great. I love a good XO cognac or even a VSOP. I've had some great cognacs over my life, and they've always been enjoyable. That's something I'm going to read you about the cognac there. Let's see. There's something else here. Where is it? Yes, there is, but I need to find it. We talked about... we had an episode about sake. A while back. I don't know how long ago, but we had an episode talking about Japanese sake. That's basically their wine. I mean, we talked about wine from different countries and everything, and sake was the one that we talked about most from Japan. I found this, and I thought this was interesting here. Brewed in the heartland of sake, which is Nara, Japan. N-A-R-A, Nara, Japan, which is the sake region. New Taiku, T-Y-K-U, coconut, Nagari. That's the type of sake. Nagari is a lightly filtered or cloudy sake. So whenever you see sake marked Nagari, N-I-G-O-R-I, that means that it's not filtered, but tightly filtered, just lightly filtered in a cloudy type sake. They're making a premium Nagari sake with coconut. So it's a low-calorie flavored coconut sake. The coconut Nagari is brewed with Akebono rice polish more than 30%, natural spring water from Mount Katsuragi, and yeast and handmade koji. And I don't know what koji is. After the brewing, it's infused with flavors of all coconut with hints of vanilla. It says, for the best experience, it should be served chilled and shaked well before pouring to blend everything together. And it is very good on ice or adding some pineapple juice to it to make a low-calorie version of a pina colada. Interesting. I just, you know, I thought that was fascinating. A coconut sake. And there's a new thing we learned too. And Nagari is a lightly filtered cloudy sake. But the suggested retail price, it comes in a real pretty white bottle tapered at the top, just a slow taper to the top. 720 milliliter, not a 750, which is your normal wine size, but a 720 milliliter for $15.99. So, thought that was interesting. A new coconut sake out there. Oh, that's global favorite base. These are different things I'm seeing. I don't know if y'all, I'm sure you have, most of you have, or if you haven't, you have maybe heard something about it or have maybe seen it written somewhere or something. But California, in the last election, was voting on a proposition out there to mark all foods and everything that have been genetically modified with the description that it has been genetically modified. And it failed. It failed much to everyone's surprise, because a lot of people really thought it was going to pass, and a lot of money was spent on both sides of that to try to pass it one way or not pass it the other way. But there's a lot of stuff out there. But the thing is, I hadn't heard anything, and I was trying to find some stuff about that, if it would affect wine in any way. Grapes, some grapes have been genetically modified. Some of the hybrids they have, and some of the stuff they're doing with the hybrids and stuff to make them resistant to different things. Like in Florida, we have Pierce disease down here, and we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but Pierce disease is spread by the glassy-winged sharpshooter. A glass-winged sharpshooter can't survive in cold climates, so you all are lucky up there in the north. As far as that goes, that doesn't mean that, you know, you're not unlucky with a lot of other stuff that's up there in the cold. But the glass-winged sharpshooter carries a disease called Pierce disease. And Pierce disease gets into the grapevines, infects the grapevines. The glass-winged sharpshooter infects grapevines with Pierce disease, and grapevines die. That's pretty much a death sentence for them. You've heard us talk about Pierce disease on the program. Some of our guests have even mentioned it. But University of Florida has been working on plants to try to grow them in Florida for a number of years. And they've done some genetic research even to try to get these plants that grow in Florida. And they're Southern California. The climate's warm enough there, and they do have problems sometimes there with Pierce disease. And the glass-winged sharpshooter is something that they're constantly looking for and constantly battling and trying to keep out of there. But point being is genetically modified. This would fall under the category also of a genetically modified plant or something that would go. So I was trying to find out if this passed, that this would apply to wines or certain wines, or if, you know, I don't know. And so I'm still trying to find out. Since it failed, since the proposition failed, then people are, well, they're still saying that it's going to happen again. It hasn't really just stopped just because that one fell. They're saying that it's going to pop up again because people are a little leery and a little worried about the genetically modified organisms out there. And they're afraid it's going to hurt them. Although, and I have to say this with all confidence, it has been tested and proven over and over again that genetically modified plants and all that has never shown any problems with people consuming them and stuff. But still, though, it's there's been no medical things or no anything that causes problems that they have found so far. Now, that's again what they found so far. But again, you know, we can refer to eggs. 1 month they say that you can eat them. The next month they said don't touch them. They can cause you cholesterol. The next month they say eat them again. The next month they say don't touch them again. So, you know, who knows? This is just genetically modified. We have talked to wineries that are organic. We've talked to wineries that are biodynamic. All these are saying this is the way to go and all that. Genetically modified plants and how it affects wines and what it's going to do to that, and if they continue doing these things, all that. I don't know. I'll see if I can't find out more information and pass on to you, but this was in the election, and I've been following it pretty closely, and I wanted to bring it up on the program because it's something that we may have to face, something we may have to talk about in the future. So, hit that quickly there. Portable, stackable, single-serve wine launched. This is something that I really thought, wow, this is interesting. They're saying it's more than a gimmick. It's stacked wines, now a single-serve PET packaging. It is coming out in Chardonnay, Merlot, Pinot Grigio, all different ones. Over the past several years, a number of new packaging formats have been introduced for wine that depart from your traditional glass bottles. And among these have been all sorts of innovations. You're seeing aluminum cans, liquid cartons. You're seeing PET bottles and even pouches. And we've all seen these on the markets. Or if you've seen a box wine has a pouch inside and it keeps air into it, which, you know, if you're going to have a glass of wine at night and you live by yourself, that would serve its purpose well. But they're having all these different types. And some of the packages have been developed to offer a single-serve solution. While others, this is many times, however, the consumer has perceived this as subpar quality wines. They don't have to be. You know, I don't think just because the packaging is what it is, that doesn't mean that the wine can't be good. And, you know, they can. It's like box wines. And before I go into this anymore here, I want to talk about box wines. Box wines, there's nothing wrong with that. If you live by yourself or just you and a partner or something, and you want a glass of wine at night and you can't finish a whole bottle, which, you know, is beyond me why people can't. But if you want a glass of wine at night and you can't finish a whole bottle, then, you know, a box wine is a good alternative. You can put that in the refrigerator. It holds anywhere from 1.5 bottles to 3 bottles or even 4 bottles. And it's got a little spigot on it. And you can pour your wine out, and it's got the plastic inside the PET lining inside, and it collapses around there. You're not going to get air into it, and it's a good thing. And the wines are okay. I mean, they're the same price basically as you're paying for your standard, you know, $7-$8 bottle of wine that most people buy. Although since it's in one big box, it's even a little bit cheaper, like $5 a bottle on the average. So nothing wrong with that. There's a new, in March 2012, Newport Beach, California, startup Stacked Wines, LLC, launched a portable single-serve PET, that's PET, which means a plastic PET wine package backed by more than 18 months of product and package engineering that they said provides both quality and convenience. Packaging for Stacked, and that's what it's called, Stacked, which comprises four interlocking stackable stemless PET wine glasses bundled in an eye-catching shrink sleeve label, uses a proprietary technology to provide up to a 14-month shelf life, a sophisticated drinking experience, and a supply chain-friendly footprint. The line's three California wine varieties, which is Pinot Grigio, Chardonnay, and Merlot, are said to have been created by the company's in-house sommelier with light and refreshing flavor profiles designed to match the casual venues in which they are meant to be enjoyed. Says co-founder and vice president of marketing for the operation of Stack Wine, says this is not just a packaging concept, it is a premium wine that offers convenience. We don't see this as just a novelty. We see it as an improved way to package premium wine. Interesting little things. I won't go into all the rest of this here. It tells more about it and tells about the concept and, you know, and all this other stuff. But it's just, it's three little glasses, if you will, each stemless PET wine glass, and it's plastic. I mean, PET is plastic. But each stemless PET wine glass is individually sealed with an aluminum lid. And the size of each one is 187 milliliters. So you have four 187-milliliter PET wine glasses, which is a 750 total on the 750 total on the thing. So 375 times four gives us, well, actually 748. So you're just shy of 750, which is the same size as the regular bottles you get. So but it's individual, and you can pop one off, you can drink one, and the others are there, so you're not opening it and doing it. It's not breakable. It is good for tailgate parties or picnics or camping. You don't have to have the whole thing at once. Don't have to worry about a corkscrew. You don't have to worry about glassware. You don't have to worry about any of that other stuff. It is just something that it's stacked and single serve 187 milliliter wine servings. So interesting little thing, just little small plastic glasses and stemless glasses. And that's what we're using at the winery, stemless now. So it looks just a lot like our little glasses we're using. In fact, it was actually designed to replicate a stemless wine glass when they designed this stuff. So, interesting little thing. If you see them out there, I haven't seen any yet. I've been looking around for it. It's supposed to be national distribution pretty soon. They're moving through California and into Las Vegas and to Phoenix areas, and they're supposed to be coming across national distribution within the next few months here. So, if you see them out there, I'd like to really see one. Or if you don't want to give me the whole thing, just cut off the shrink wrap labels off the front of it and the whole thing and drop it in the mail to me, because I'd love to see what that looks like. I can't wait until it gets out here so I can really take a look at it. The instructions on the label says, 1, unzip wrapper, 2, snap apart, 3, peel lid, and 4, drink and enjoy. So, interesting. I'd love to see one of those. So we're at 8 o'clock now. I've covered a whole bunch of stuff. I will try to see if I can get a guest next week. Let's see if there's something else here I want to talk about. Oh, new boxes, new shipping boxes are coming out. People are probably a lot used to the egg crate type boxes or get them with wine in it. They're coming out with a new one now that is just all cardboard put together. Unisource Worldwide and Engineered Solutions Division has created a new box. You may be seeing those out. They're getting real, real good reviews on it and everything because it's able to be shipped easily. It's lighter. It's easier to handle. And every time you can save weight and shipping, no matter on what phase of the shipping, it is always better. And let's see if there's something else I want. St. Michelle required old wine. St. Michelle Winery out of Washington has required the old wine brand of Old Wine Company, also in the same area. So they are expanding their line a little bit there by picking them up. And Coppola out of California has added new wine to his Diamond Collection. And this is a red blend. It's made up of 27% Zinfandel, 26% Syrah, 20% Petite Syrah, 15% Cabernet Sauvignon, and 12% Merlot from vineyards in Napa, Sonoma, Lodi, and El Dorado. The wine was aged in French oak barrels for a year and features blackberry, blackcurrant, licorice flavors to it. $750 suggested $18, which is a reasonable price for a Coppola wine. That's out there. It's nationally distributed now, so you can find that everywhere. And then another thing, too, new packaging bottles. Again, the cartons, they're using sustainable cartons to package wine in. The Tetra cartons. You may have seen them out. They've been floating around for some time, these Tetra cartons, but they're coming out with some decent wines on them now. Calnet is coming out with a Chardonnay from Mendocino, and so it looks like a pretty interesting approach to the cartons that they have now. So, but I'll let me check some more on this GMO on Proposition 37, by the way. It's, I never mentioned that, but it's Proposition 37. But it's really quite a controversy on that during this last election out in California. It didn't pass. They expected it to, but it didn't pass. But I was concerned and wondering about grapes on that. And so I've got a couple emails from people here. I will get with them and see if they can get back with me and let me know what's going on with that. And it's not dead. And, you know, we've all heard this before. What happens in California tends up to happen around the country. And it very possibly may happen there, too, simply because, you know, if a company has to put their GMO information on their bottle or on their packaging, are they going to just make labels for California and then something for the rest of the country, or are they going to spread it around the country? You know, these are all questions that were being asked and being thrown around out there during the debates and stuff. So, don't know. These are all interesting things. I'll see if I can't find out some more how it might affect grapes there. So that's it for the, you know, what I have. You know, it's funny because I always say, I don't know if we're going to last an hour, and invariably I always end up talking over an hour.
Hey, you know, that's amazing. The amount of information, and it's some good stuff. You can blame me for whatever, but I always thought sake was, I didn't know sake was a wine. I thought it was some kind of topping or something. I don't know why. Because I always thought it was like some kind of hot sauce.
No, it's a rice wine is what sake is, and a lot of it's, you know. It's a big item in Japan, and now it's spreading around the country. It's higher alcohol than that. We talked about sake a little bit a couple years ago, I think. We talked a little bit about sake, but it's part taste, to say the least. Oh, here's something else I just found, and while we're on subjects of different things, let me talk about this. This is out of Progressive Grocer magazine, and it says the U.S. wine market is growing according to the latest category research from Nielsen, which found that table wines priced at $20 and up are gaining 11.1% by volume and 12.3% by value in this last year. The less expensive wines haven't fared so well. So I thought that was just really interesting that the $20 and up prices – it says those priced under $9 combined for the 750 milliliter bottles combined for declines of 1.7% and 1% over a 52-week period, which, you know, that's, I tell people, you want to increase your quality, jump out of that $7 to $15 range, and it seems like a lot of people are doing that. Table wine consumption has held pretty much steady from 2008 through 2011, or through 2010. But in 2011, the rate has increased by 4.7%. And this hasn't been seen since back in 2000, has the table wine category increased. It says here that although American wine drinkers consume much less wine than any other country on a per capita basis, the United States, ranked as the fourth largest producer of wine overall, is now ahead of France and Italy in the volume of table wine consumed. So, wow. The trend in demand for table wines in the United States has allowed the U.S. wine industry to weather the recent economic storm, with gains being driven by many factors over the past few years, particularly the adoption of wine in early adulthood by the millennial generation, the availability of quality wine at special prices, and with the acceptance of moderate wine consumption as a compatible with a healthy lifestyle. So wine consumption is going up. The biggest top 10 table wine brands: Barefoot, Sutter Home number 2, Yellowtail out of Australia number 3, Woodbridge by Mondavi, then Franzia Box Wine. I talked about box wine a little bit earlier. That's number 5. Kendall Jackson Ventures, 6, Chateau St. Michel of Washington, 7, Behringer is 8, Cupcake Vineyard, 9, and Gallo Family Vineyards is 10. Gallo is 10. They've got a lot of wines out there, and they're number 10. The total wines purchased by households with kids, no kids, the dollar index, this is, you know, the dollar index, value index. I won't go into the formula of that, but just suffice to say, no kids, $117. Any kids, $66. Kids under 6, 60, 6 to 12, 62, and kids 13 to 17, 71. Obviously, when you have teenagers, you need to drink a lot more wine. So.
Okay. You're all ready. Guess so.
And there's our show for 20. Yeah.
All right. So we have, let's see, there's no special events going on. I didn't get a newsletter. My last newsletter was back in December. Nothing yet. So no wine fest or anything this week?
No, nothing this week. We just, you know, come on out and enjoy the end of the holiday season and relax under the oak trees and have yourself some. Just, you know, sit around and relax because, oh, geez, schools start Monday again on most areas or Tuesday. And
Yay.
You know, I don't know. The roads start getting packed.
We do have road problems when all those kids go back on the road. Some licensed to drive, I guess, maybe some not licensed. I don't know what the deal is, but it's chaos on the road, that's for sure. I guess it could be. It can go either way, but it's always great to get underneath the oak trees and enjoy it out at the Florida State's winery. So if you're in the area, stop by anytime because you're open 7 days a week, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. and enjoy it. Great atmosphere, family friendly, pet friendly, and you definitely want to go visit the winery. And I'm sure they would glad to have you there. And with over 40,000 people, there has to be at least a couple of you in Florida in this area that can stop by there and say hi. So,
Some of you listen to the show.
That's right. Some of you listen to the show. And they may look at you funny and go, what? But It's great. So stop by and see Ron and the gang and everybody and a bunch of great people. So definitely do that. And I guess I've already scheduled the shows for the rest of the month, but I don't have the guest information. But, you know, the best way to stay tuned with what's happening on the show is through the Facebook page, because I do I read it from, you know, daily just to see, you know, what kind of things are going on and if there's any outstanding questions or anything about the show. And Ron posts there, you know, every time something comes up with a guest, there's a new post on the Facebook page. So check it out on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR and keep up with the show. And if you're a member of Facebook, be sure to hit the like button so we know that you're – because I think we're up to like 30-something on there, which isn't too bad.
33,
yeah. Yeah, so that's not too bad. And but, you know, we like to see that increase, and we picked up a couple this week. I think I got notices on some of that. So that's a real cool. Thank you for doing that and for keeping in tune with the program and for tuning in. And or you can, you know, look at the show page here on Blog Talk Radio. I, you know, update the shows even though it doesn't show anything now other than a show's coming up and, you know, just a generic information. But, you know, once I see that there's, you know, or get information that there's somebody, you know, going to be on the show, then I'll update the information. But we're booked for the rest of the month, so tune us in. And even if it's in the archives, we're glad that you're here and yep, enjoying the show. So that's fantastic. So we're looking good to a new year, and it's going to be great as always, and informative, entertaining, and that's what it's here, all about wine. So thank you for joining us tonight. And unless there's anything else, we'll see you back next Thursday, which will be
10th.
Right. The January the 10th. There's, add January 7 the to 10th. Today. It should be kind of easy, I guess. But January the 10th, 7 days from today at 7 p.m. Eastern time in the U.S. And we'll see you. Thanks again for tuning in. And I'll do the 2012 exit song right now.
Thank you all for listening.
Yes. Thank you again. We'll see you all next week. Thanks.
Bye.
Yep.
Ready to dance.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly, and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.